And unfortunately, I may not be that neat in my handwriting, but I wanted to just go over what we do when we do transport and why. You know, so no one is doing transport completely correct. And the funny thing is, I actually didn't understand transport just from the astrophysics community, in part because they would argue about things, but never actually give a talk where they described what they were arguing about. And at the time, it was Phil Pinto and Peter Huflich. And they were both doing good work. They both made different assumptions, and they both argued that, you know, they would argue about those assumptions, but none of us actually knew what their assumptions were. So they were arguing, and it was a game. Thomas Junk and I would sit in the back of a meeting room and say something that we knew would tick one of them off and then watch them fight. In fact, I remember it in this, it was when this these doors were open, it was one of these big meetings, and Thomas and I got yelled at by the moderator for getting them started on that. So, but it was funny for at least that little bit. This is the transport equipment. So what you can do is you can, you know, any kind of particle, you can decide, it's no longer in equilibrium, it's actually moving on its own, I need to transport it. And then you get something like the Boltzmann transport equation. So this could be true for electrons, neutrons, cosmic rays. This equation can describe it. Once I said I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to assume that they're just sitting there in situ and stuck. So if your radiation is really trapped, you don't need this. You just have your, you put it in your pressure term and you say, you give a radiation pressure and that's all you do. If your radiation is not trapped, you start writing down equations like this. So this is the intensity. Now you guys, many of you have probably all seen this, but let me just go through a little bit of the source and sink terms. You have some, if the matter is generating energy, this is where it's going into photons. So if the matter is generating photons, this is that source term. And when you're doing transport, you can have, so you lose in a given direction. So this has a direction to it, it has a position, has an energy, and this is why everyone thinks this ends up being a hard equation, is the intensity has an angular component, a position, an energy, and a time. So it starts to get many dimensions if you wanted to solve it all correctly. So I have photons that are scattered. So this is going to be my scattering cross-section. This is my absorption. So S for scattering, A for absorption. Photons are scattered out of this angle. When they scatter, they go out of the angle. And they absorbed out of the angle, and that's loss terms for this intensity. So I'm losing photons in that particular omega r energy tau, I mean t. I can lose it through scattering, or I can get it absorbed. The absorbed goes energy back into the matter. If it's absorbed, it also puts in momentum into the matter. If you're depending on your scattering also adds momentum to the matter. Or it can, depending on what you're doing for the scattering. If you assume isoenergetic, then you should be leery of adding momentum from your scattering. The source term actually takes away energy from the matter. You can solve your nice radiation hydrodynamics equations if you do all of this. The problem with this is that it's many dimensions. It's slow. People don't do this. So a lot of groups, the initial kinds of things to do is to do, I don't want to worry about the angular term, so I'm going to take this and just take the first moment of the angle. So I integrate over angle, I remove the angle term. I also don't want to deal with the energy term, so I'm going to integrate over energy as well. So then I get down to something where I just have the intensity as a function of radius and time, and then it's a tractable thing. But I still keep it time dependent. So that's one way to do it. So you can do that, that's called diffusion. You can add fixes to diffusion. That will get you a little bit better answer in some conditions. So you can add little, you know, diffusion is not getting the right answer because you've played with the angle. You can add some terms to try to fix it.
Is diffusion frequency independent?
No. Well, when you say gray diffusion, it's frequency independent.
Okay.
So that's I did both. I both integrated over angle and energy. If I just do over angle, I get multi-group fluximity diffusion. or diffusion. If I put in a fluximeter, right, I get fluximeter diffusion. I could take one more moment, and that's when people call variable ending tensor transport. I've taken one more moment. Now I have angular information. I can solve the problem. I think at the time, I'm going to get this wrong. One of the teams between Peter Hofick and Phil Pinto was doing variable Eddington factor. I think it was Phil Pinto, time dependent. What Peter Hofick was doing was he said, I want to do the angle part right. So I'm actually going to do the angles. I'm not going to just do a second moment. And so what you then do is you say, oh, I'm going to take my intensity that's some nice, has some function with angle, and I'm going to discretize it. And the dumbest way, and funnily enough, I think this is what was called Boltzmann transport in the for the initial stuff that we did for neutrino transport, was I'm going to just say I have J bins, and I'm going to have an intensity J in that bin, where it's now just a function of R, E, and T, and I'm going to then have something like this, a delta function, or you can pick whatever you want. Sorry, this is J. And now I've discretized it. That is not a good way to do it, but it is certainly the simplest. The more complex ways, you do something like, and I'm going to write this down. This is what, when Wes was talking about SN methods, they look something more like this.
Chris?
Yeah.
Has anybody ever tried something where they allow the angle discretization to float according to some measure of the directionality of the radiation field? If you were shining a flashlight in some direction, then all the discretization points and angle would suddenly move to cover that, whereas if it was more isotropic, it would be spread out uniformly over the sphere.
Like AMR kind of thing?
Yeah, it's
a Lagrange, almost like a Lagrangian mesh and angle.
I'm looking for, I don't know of anybody that's tried that. I don't know if anybody has tried that. You can imagine doing that, but then you're really, well, so yeah, an adaptive binning for the angle. I don't know of anybody that's done that. I don't know where it would go awry. The other way is to do something where you set a set of basis vectors. So this is what people typically do, where they set a set of basis vectors. That's how they discretize it. That makes things a little bit more smooth. It is not a perfect solution. Depending on how few basis vectors you use, you can see these rays where they where the basis vectors are strongest, so you can get a problem there. But this is one method. So I think what was happening with Peter Hofick is he was doing this full discretization, saying it was important, whereas Phil Pinto just had a variable ending factor thing. But to make his more tractable, he took away the time-dependent term and did a post-process. So that's what they argued about. I really never understood this in all the discussions on this, because they didn't actually ever go through and say, this is what I'm doing to this equation. They just argued about which one was right. They knew it, because in the end, after learning it, I went back and read their papers. It was very clear. I was like, oh, that's what they were talking about. So you're already putting in problems when you do something like this. The other way was Monte Carlo that Wes talked about already. So you can actually just discretize it by saying, I'm going to have packets, and I'm just going to transport them through the medium. You can do that. That's another method you can do. The method that has been talked about for at least since I was a grad student, because Phil was trying to get us to do it even back then, but I've never seen it done fully, is the something where you do a variable Eddington factor, but you use a higher order scheme like this to tell you what the tensors are on a fairly regular basis. People do some tricks like this. No one's done one. Well, I don't know a production code that's doing it. There's lots of non-production codes that are testing and doing that kind of test. The advantage then is you can do the, if the variable Eddington tensor components change slowly, you don't have to do the transport, the full transport equation as much. You can also get away with some of the, if you use Monte Carlo to be the thing that's giving you those tensors, you can get away with some of the problems Monte Carlo has with the packets tracing the energy and hence not having good packet resolution where you have only a few photons. So it has some strengths to it. I will believe it is great once someone gets a production code that actually runs and does, can do full up problems on it. So these are the equations we're doing. You can see we've already made the first, level of hell because we discretized our equations and made some assumptions. And then the question is just how many levels of hell do you want to go down in transport? And this is where you can get into trouble. Once you do this, you then have other problems because you also discretize the space. So all the things that you're worried about in space discretization, you also have. And some of the things Wes already talked about, some where can you resolve the photosphere? If you don't resolve the photosphere, you can get the wrong temperature for where you're at in the photosphere. And I think this is where I showed that experiment where we were doing a few weeks ago, where we were doing an experiment. We were following this radiation flow through. We were going to measure the equation of state. We send a shock through a material. We're going to measure the temperature as the shock is moving, thinking we're going to measure the shock temperature at the peak. So here's the shock temperature going like this. And unfortunately, it had this, it looked something like this because the radiation would lead a little bit and heat up the material ahead of it. And this is where tau equal one surface was. And so we were only seeing here, we weren't actually seeing this temperature. This was more of a radiation experiment than it was an equation and state experiment, which is the story of my life. Every experiment I've done, the primary physics that dictates the answer is not the one we were planning to study. So you can have something where you're not resolving the photosphere. There's also a problem with, a problem with numerical advection in hydro you can have with transport, where you have some grid zones, and they call it, funny enough, they don't call it numerical advection, they call it teleportation. But you have radiation, and it's moving out, and some radiation crosses this boundary, and it absorbs into the matter. What do you do as far as how does that matter emit the next time step? Because now I've heated this whole zone up. If I do that, now I start emitting over here as well, so I've actually teleported the radiation. The tricks that they do in this is they actually do a sub-zone information, and so they say when I re-emit photons, they're re-emitted based on the gradient across these zones.
So they do some kind of polynomial reconstruction?
And depending on who you are, there's some of them are just straight like this. There's actually some people that do a nice Gaussian where they argue is better because it really the radiation hits a wall and then goes to zero. But whatever it is, people do something like this, and that's another thing that you can worry about when you're doing these studies. If you could resolve, I mean, the nice thing is that with this is if you resolved in space better, you would actually know what your error is. So this, at least this is one where you can do a resolution study and figure out what you're doing. I already said, we could do gray transport. That has problems with it. And so with that, I was going to spend the rest of my time, hopefully finish early, on the problems with plugging in, figuring out what I should be using for the opacities. So I will, if there's no questions on the transport, I will go into opacities. So opacities. The first step you need to have is you need to go talk to some atomic physicists, and they need to tell you, they need to do their quantum mechanics, and they need to calculate things like what are the level states, what are the coefficients, the Einstein coefficients for things like, you know, from for your emission, for your absorption, stimulated emission. They get all those coefficients. You have that. The next step is, how do I...
Can I ask? So, at this moment, do you know if ab initio calculated opacities agrees well with measured opacities at this energy where they can be measured?
So there was an experiment to study the iron opacity, which seems like, I don't think we can get hydrogen wrong. I mean, we do this in undergraduate school. But when you get to heavier elements, it starts getting clever, you know, tricky. So iron is a good, tricky atom, but it's not a horrible atom. They have done experiments. There was a series of experiments. The problem with experiments is understanding the uncertainties. The latest, greatest experiments were led by a guy named Jim Bailey in Sandia National Lab. He did his first set of experiments with, I think, slightly lower, you know, lowish temperatures. It looked really good. The iron opacities from the experiments matched what the atomic physicists predicted. He then did a slightly higher temperature, and the iron opacities did not agree at all with the experiments that he did. That's in a Nature paper. And so I'm focusing on that emission. But if you go read the literature, do a test like that to say what we're doing is approximately right. What is the doing a test that says what is the right